Okay. And I'm actually going to read you Matthew's biography, because it's very short, and I just really like this. He said, Matthew is a father, a husband, and a friend. He makes websites because he wants people to be happy. So Matthew's going to tell us why our website stinks and it's apples.
Hi everybody, thanks. Thanks very much, and thanks for putting up with my difficulty. I'm a font nerd, so I realize it would be very difficult to install all my fonts onto the shared machine for this. Thanks for coming down. Well, a lot of us deal with our library websites every day, and most of us probably think or hope that our library website is something like this. But if we're really honest with ourselves, our websites probably are more like this. So this is actually a talk about library websites, but it's really a talk about people. It's a talk about our patrons, it's a talk about us, how we're doing things, what we're doing wrong, how and who it hurts, and what we can do about it. These are all tweets I pulled a couple days ago waiting in the airport with a simple search of library website. 90% of those searches, by the way, were libraries closing from the hurricane, and the rest were complaints. So in 1939, in Palo Alto, California, two guys started a company called Hewlett-Packard. And they were electrical engineers who wanted better tools for doing their own job. They built test equipment. So they were tools designed by experts for experts. And their first motto for their company was actually designed for the person at the next bench. Right? The question that drove them when they made their product was, how do we do this? Now, if we think about the early history of library websites and catalogs, it's kind of similar to this, right? In the 60s, we started computerizing our records, getting them into computers because they were easier to search than physical catalogs. In the 70s and 80s, we started networking those catalogs together because it was easier for us to search things for our patrons to find cooler things. But they were tools built for us. They were built for experts by experts. And the question that drove us throughout all that was, how do we do this? Well, in the 50s, Hewlett-Packard's business got really big, and much bigger than just test equipment. And their user base changed. And they adapted to that. They started asking different questions about their users. Right? They said, how do our users do these things? Right? Not just how electrical engineers learn to do it. So, in the 90s, libraries opened up our catalogs to the public. Anybody could go and search the online catalog. You didn't have to go through a librarian. The problem was that we didn't ask any different questions. We continued to ask the question, how do we do this? So, we need to evolve, right? We're still building these tools basically just for experts. So, things are changing a little bit. We've got some libraries now who are asking this new question, how do our users do things? Right? You may have noticed this. Library websites are a much more common topic now at library conferences, and that's a good thing. In the last couple of years, a lot of libraries have started to change their thinking about how their websites work. So the problem becomes, how do we figure out what our users need, right? Well, I think Whitney Hess, who's a user experience designer, said it best. She said, user experience is not about expert intuition, it's about expert listening. We don't need to figure out intuitively or guess what our users want or need. We need to ask them, right? There's a lot of different ways you can do this. And there's a lot of talks about it, and you can find more information on it, from user interviews, usability tests. But the important thing is to get the people who use your site directly involved in making it better. Because if you really think about it, what's a website other than a tool to connect one group of people to another group? I think Frank Shamiro, the designer, says that part of it best. He says, the web is people all the way down. And he has this great quote from this essay, The Space Between You and Me. It says, if you think about what the web is, it's this. Tanya checks her email and gets a message from her sister. Brad is the systems administrator who turns on the oscillating fans in the server room. Shannon writes some content for her employer's website. Tim curses because he can't find the content that she has wrote. Sergey and Larry create a website so Tim can find that content, right? It's all about people on both sides of the web. So the problem, though, is we often get into this habit when we start thinking about people using our sites, we get really focused on their behavior. And we ask that question, how, what do people want? What do they do? And how can we adapt to that? And that's an important question to ask, and we have to move a little bit further. Hugh Rundle, who's an Australian librarian, who writes a great blog that you should follow, he said, you know, your members don't come to your library to find books. They actually come to find solace or excitement, to find companionship or solitude. They come to be inspired. The book is just one way that they get there. So when we're thinking about how to adapt for our users, we need to be thinking deeper than just their behaviors. We need to think about how our users feel, right? Because ultimately what happens is we get focused on their behaviors and we forget that they're whole, complete people, right? They're there for more than just to get our objects or get our help. They want, they have deeper needs that we need to think about. And what happens is when we build these websites that are complicated and confusing, we make our users feel stupid. Because they've come to us at a point when they're vulnerable. They've admitted, like, I don't know something, or I need something. And they come to our tools and they try to make them work for them. And it just doesn't always work. It's very difficult, and oftentimes our tools are much too confusing. So we have to work a little bit more on thinking about how people feel. Now, Maya Angelou said, people will forget what you said and what you did, but they will never forget the way you made them feel. So even if those of you who have changed your website and made it easier, does everybody magically go, oh great, that looks so much better? No, they still mad at you because of the website you had 4 years ago. I know this personally because I was teaching college students while I was managing a library website. And they're not shy about telling me what they feel about it. So I know it doesn't matter even if you change something, people are going to hold on to that. Because we think about things from a much more emotional level than we do always from a rational level. We have to think about the whole person that we're trying to serve. Aaron Walter, who's a designer for the company MailChimp, an email newsletter service, I think he tries to explain this idea by using Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Am I giving anybody horrible flashbacks to their mid-country's life? I hope not. But Maslow's hierarchy basically talks about what we need as to be a complete human being. And our physical needs are sort of the base of it. And then at the very top are these emotional needs that make us fully whole. And he reconfigures this pyramid for user interface design. And he says, look, you've got these basic needs that you have to have at the bottom to make the site, make people actually want to use the site. That's great. But there's something that you need to serve at the top. And he calls that pleasure, making the site pleasure. It's sort of the emotional component of the site, right? So you'll notice that most of the talk you hear about library websites are about making them usable, and that's just in the middle of the pyramid, right? Because Walter says, look, trying to design a site to be usable is like a chef trying to make edible food, right? We can do better than that. We can move beyond that kind of goal. So we need to move on to ask a different question. Right? We need to continue to ask how people do things, but we also want to start thinking about how they do. Because it's going to help us get a more well-rounded idea of how to approach some of the design problems we're going to face as librarians, especially as more and more of our things move on. So, Alan Cooper, who's a usability consultant, said this. He said, there's little difference, technically, between a complicated, confusing program and a simple, fun, and powerful product. The difference is one of the culture, training, and attitude of the people who make them. So it's not that we lack the technical capacity to make better websites, right? But it's that we're asking the wrong questions. Our organizations are what are slowing us down. So I have a couple of strategies, really sophisticated ones, for making better websites. Because ultimately, when you think about it, bad library websites are actually just a symptom of a larger organizational problem, right? We're asking the wrong question. We're still asking the question, what do librarians do when we design these things instead of trying to think of our users as small and people? Now, this is only, I want to be clear, we're only doing this generally on the website. We're really great at dealing with people when they come into the library. We're really good at that. We have a lot of practice, hundreds and hundreds of years of serving people when they come in. So we're great at treating people as people. But we have to figure out how we can build care for people into our websites. So the first thing, these are all mostly strategies for dealing with people in your organization on that particular side of the website, because we have to fix that part before we can really start fixing the part where our users are coming to. So the first thing is to be really nice. It sounds like I flew halfway around the world to tell you to be nice to people. It seems kind of silly, but you'd be amazed at how far this goes. Okay. Especially when we feel that we're right about something, oftentimes we're not always the nicest about dealing with it. And so I can say that this actually can have a powerful impact on the tools that you're building. I designed in July of this year and built what I think is a really terrific unified search system that uses all of our vendor APIs to pull tons of content in a single search screen for our users. I did my user research, I knew what they wanted, I talked to lots of people, I did usability testing, I have a bucket load of statistics to back up my points, but I was a jerk when I presented it to my colleagues. I knew I was right, I was cocky about it, and no one is using that tool today, probably mostly because I was a jerk about it. So it is really important to be nice to people, internally as well as externally, when you're trying to do good things for the web. Even be nice to the person that always seems to disagree with everything you say, because there's a one of them that get everybody involved in some way. Now, I'm not saying that you should give everyone in your library veto power over everything you do on the website. We don't want to do that. But we do want to make sure that everybody has a chance to have their voice heard. At our library, we do a monthly usability test with students. And everybody in the entire library is invited to be in the observation room. That's everybody from the dean all the way down to the part-time student workers. After the tests are over and they've watched them, we get together and everybody has an equal chance to talk about what they saw, what they think needs to be fixed, and how we should address it. We don't always do everything that everybody wants. We have a lively discussion on it. But everybody has that opportunity to have their voice heard about what's going on the site. It really goes a long way for getting buy-in when you want to make some of the changes. Understand the culture of your library. Now, I worked at several libraries, and they all have, some quirks. And when I first came to Grand Valley, when I started working on the website, I found that there were some of my librarian colleagues seemed to be interfering in almost everything I did on the website. I could not figure out why they seemed so invested in it. Until I discovered that under the previous theme, there had been a meeting every Thursday afternoon where all the librarians would gather together and make every operational decision together about the library. They were used to having a voice in everything that got said at the library. And so they wanted the opportunity to have their voice heard. So knowing that about our culture allowed me to change the way that I dealt with a lot of my coworkers. I now build extra time in to any project to give presentations early, to solicit feedback, and to sit down one-on-one with a specific group of people who really feel that they need their voices heard maybe more frequently than just in a large group. But understanding that culture really helps. Backing yourself up with data doesn't hurt either. So you're probably all familiar with Google Analytics. I'm not going to talk about that. I'm hoping you're all doing some user research, either usability testing more than once every 3 to 5 years, or you're doing user interviews, or you're talking to somebody to your user. But here's a couple of tools that I found to be incredibly useful for getting your point across when you're trying to back up some of the things that need to be done. The first is email. You can show all the data you want about how many people visit a page, or how many clicks are here, or how many clicks are there. But a picture is so much more valuable for trying to explain to people how things actually get done. When I was trying to make the case that nobody is really clicking on the links on our homepage, this is an old version of our homepage, I showed numbers and I, crunched statistics, and it didn't really make a dent until I just showed this picture and said, can we get rid of some links now? And they said, sure. As you can see, everybody's just searching, and a handful of people are looking at a couple of the other ones. But most people were not using links. This is over a longer period, so it gives you a good sense of the traffic and where people are actually going. My notes here, by the way, say a picture can kill 1,000 links. Another tool that's really great for your content is to test its readability. So a lot of times we get excited about helping people. As librarians, we want to give them all the information that they might need. Our websites may sometimes be accused of being worthy. So, oftentimes, people are put off by that money test, or they may find it really difficult to get through. So you can actually test your content to see what the readability score is. This is my slides are also available through the Lanyard site and also through my website if you want to get these URLs later. This is readability-score.com. You paste in your content, you can throw your CNR there to strip out, and it will give you a reading score, both a readability ease score, which is a score between 0 and 100, as well as a grade level score through various different tests. And you want to shoot for probably a grade level of between 8 and 9 for most websites. That's what most newspapers around the world shoot for. If you're targeting children or teens, you may want to go lower. You probably don't want to go higher than 8 or grade 8 or 9 because you're actually, you don't want people to have to work to understand what you're trying to tell them. Right? You want to make it easy for people to read. Now the content in here is actually the text from my university's admissions homepage. And it has a grade level rating of 13.5, which means you need 2 years of college in order to understand the text on our admissions level. That's kind of a problem. It's a good thing for them to know. They didn't know this, by the way, if I didn't show the slide. One of the most powerful strategies you can use, though, for your website is to iterate. Make small changes more frequently. Never redesign your site. Redesigning your website is actually sort of like an invitation to create a committee, right? How many people are in here are on a committee, at least one committee at their library? There's some people who are not, maybe others. There's only like 3 hands up here. But you want to avoid committee redesigns, do not go. So what you want to do is be able to make small changes, and in the time that you can make several small changes, you can actually have a redesign. This is our library website when I took over Grand Valley's website about a year and a half ago. And I never redesigned the site, but I made small changes regularly based on feedback from users and usability tests. And we've evolved the site slowly, because we had some patience, we had a long-term vision, to the site that we have now. Because we were able to wait, we didn't really have kids because of the market. Because we were able to wait, actually, for the right time to do it. Here's our site today. Slowly stripping back all the content that doesn't get used until we get. We still have some links that don't get used. It's still too complex. But we're down now. The original site had 27 links, and now we're down to 8. So we're getting there, but we had to have patience. And I never had to go through a whole redesign process where I had to show my content and buy them. I just sat people down, had them use the website, and let other people watch. And they said, let's change this. And over the course of time, we had a different. So the last thing you need to do, actually, is just ask the right questions. Right? Stop asking, what do librarians do? And start asking, how do our users do this? And how do we want people to do it? Thank you very much. Build websites for people, and I'll thank you. There's a lot of resources that my, right now this goes to actually a read list. It's my full name, IOI12. And then it has a lot of articles that sort of I use in presenting this, and I'll be putting up more information later. Thank you.